All right, so you know how we're always just like bombarded with messages trying to like persuade us, right? Ads, speeches, even that one friend who's always trying to get you to try that new restaurant. We're diving into a system today that kind of unpacks like the how and the why of all that persuasive communication. It's called APPS, the Adaptive Persuasion Profiling System.
And what I think is really fascinating about APPS is that, it's not just about like crafting some catchy slogan. It really digs deep into how our brains are actually wired, using all these insights from like neuroscience and psychology to actually analyze how we respond to all these different persuasive techniques.
So it's like a user manual for the human brain,
Yeah, kinda.
but for persuasion. I
Exactly.
am so in. So like, where do we even begin with something like this?
It all starts with understanding that the human brain, at its core, is an adaptive mental system. It's constantly taking in information, categorizing it based on our past experiences, our evolutionary history even, and then making decisions often without us consciously realizing it.
Whoa, so you're saying like our brains are hardwired to think in a certain way because of like our ancient ancestors and
In
stuff.
a way, yes.
Okay, so how do we use that to actually persuade someone in the real world to like buy a product or get behind an idea or even just agree with us in an argument?
It's all about understanding those like underlying mechanisms, those deep-seated patterns that our brains just instinctively rely on. APPS breaks this whole process of persuasive communication down into three key levels. The first is what we call collective brain principles, those universal tendencies that we all share.
So kind of like the default settings for the human brain.
Exactly. From there, APPS gets into individual personality profiles because let's face it, we all experience the world a little differently, right? We respond to information in unique ways. And then finally, it considers the situation itself, the context in which that message is delivered.
So like a persuasive message delivered during a relaxed evening at home might land differently than one blasted during like a chaotic commute.
Precisely. Even with the most carefully crafted message, timing and context are absolutely critical. It's about matching the right message to the right person at the right time.
This is blowing my mind. It's like APPS is taking all this complex science and like giving us a practical roadmap for how to persuade people. Now, this document you sent, it talks about something called attitude modification. Should I be worried? Does this veer into like mind control territory?
Not at all. It's really more about understanding the steps involved in guiding someone towards a new perspective or a new behavior. Think of it as like a framework for ethical and effective communication. In fact, APPS outlines six specific steps for what it calls attitude change.
I'm intrigued. Lay it on me. What are the six steps? I'm ready for my crash course in ethical persuasion.
Well, the first step might seem kind of obvious, but it's often the biggest hurdle to grab their attention.
Oh, tell me about it. My inbox is a battlefield of subject lines all vying for my attention.
Exactly. And once you've captured their attention, you need to actually activate the relevant mental categories in their brain. Think of it like, opening the right file folders in their mind so they can properly process and contextualize what you're saying.
So no dumping a data dump on them right away to ease them in.
Precisely. Now, here's where it gets really interesting. The third step is to connect your message with their core values, their beliefs, their attitudes, even their personality traits. And this is where the profiling part of APPS comes in. It analyzes factors like age, gender, values, lifestyle, even personality types to really understand what makes your audience tick.
Okay, so it's not just about the message itself, it's about crafting it in a way that resonates with that specific person you're trying to persuade.
Exactly. It's like tailoring a bespoke suit, but for communication. This persuasive fitness, as APPS calls it, is key. And this leads us to the fourth step, which is all about introducing new information strategically.
Okay, I'm listening. Strategically, you say.
Think of it like finding those areas of non-commitment, those blank spaces in their existing beliefs where your message can kind of, enter without triggering immediate resistance.
Interesting. Sneak attack with a message, but in a good way. I like it. What's next?
Then, and this is crucial, you connect that new information back to their core values. You demonstrate how it aligns with what they already care about, making it feel less like some external push and more like a natural extension of their existing beliefs.
I see. You got to make it make sense to them, not just to you. Brilliant. What's the final step?
Finally, you need to tailor all of this to the specific situation, what APPS calls the touch point.
Okay.
So, for example, you probably communicate differently with your boss than you would, say, pitching an idea at a conference, right?
Absolutely. You got to read the room. So this framework, are there any like real world examples that really bring it to life?
Absolutely. Let's delve into this fascinating concept called the dilution effect. It perfectly illustrates how even seemingly insignificant details can make or break a persuasive message.
Dilution effect. Okay, that sounds kind of ominous. Like, are you saying I can dilute the power of my argument by, I don't know, accidentally spilling a glass of water on my notes?
Not quite. Although I will say, sometimes a well-placed visual metaphor can be surprisingly effective in persuasion. But I digress. The dilution effect is this, well, it's kind of counterintuitive, but it's this idea that irrelevant information can actually weaken the impact of those really important facts.
Interesting.
Our brains, they crave clarity, you see.
Right.
So when we're bombarded with all these unnecessary details, it creates this cognitive overload, makes it harder to process what truly matters.
So less is more when it comes to persuasion.
You got it.
Okay, I can get behind that. But how do you determine what's truly relevant? Like, what's a persuasive detail versus just noise?
Well, that's where, you know, having that deep knowledge of your audience and their values is absolutely crucial. But it's also about structure. Yeah. And the clarity of your thought. For example, remember the document you sent? It mentioned that one of the six steps of attitude change is to introduce new information strategically.
Right, yeah.
Finding those blank spaces in their existing beliefs where your message can, you know, kind of slip in without immediately triggering resistance.
Right. Yeah, we talked about that earlier. So you're saying by focusing on delivering that key information that aligns with their existing framework, but also of avoiding those irrelevant details, that's how we can boost that persuasive impact.
Precisely. Now, speaking of tapping into those deeper levels of the brain, let's talk about the role of emotions in persuasion for a bit. Remember when we were talking about the mental event horizon earlier?
Yeah, the whole dual core processor analogy totally blew my mind. It's our brains are juggling like multiple timelines at once.
Exactly. And emotions play such a huge role in all of this. There's this theory, it's called the mood is information theory. And it suggests that our emotions actually act as a powerful shortcut for decision making, especially when we're faced with these, you know, really complex choices.
So like, if I'm already in a good mood, I might be more inclined to say yes to something without really overthinking it.
Exactly. Our emotions provide this like rapid fire feedback system.
Mm.
They're influencing our perceptions and our judgments long before our conscious minds can even catch up. Think about like those impulse purchases you were talking about earlier.
Oh, yeah.
Those often happen when we're feeling good. You know, our brain is essentially telling us, go for it, treat yourself.
Okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, actually. But emotions can be pretty powerful, even unpredictable sometimes, right? So how do we tap into that power ethically?
Yeah.
How do we walk that line between persuasion and manipulation?
Oh, that's such an important point. And APPS really emphasizes the ethical use of persuasion. That means being so mindful of how we're leveraging these emotions. We can use them to inspire, to motivate, to create positive associations, but we never want to manipulate people or prey on their vulnerabilities.
But like with great persuasive power comes great responsibility, right?
Precisely. And for a really powerful example of this, think about that iconic Marlboro Man advertising campaign. They weren't really selling cigarettes. What they were really selling was a feeling, a sense of rugged individualism. Freedom, all very carefully constructed to resonate with their target audience's unconscious desires.
And it's just crazy how effective that campaign was, even though, I mean, deep down, everyone knew that smoking wasn't exactly like conducive to a long and healthy life.
Yeah. But it perfectly illustrates how these persuasive techniques, especially those that operate below the level of conscious awareness, can be incredibly powerful.
Okay, this is all starting to make sense now. We've got the adaptive unconscious, we've got the power of emotion, and those six steps for attitude change. But there's still a piece of the puzzle missing for me. How do we know which specific persuasion techniques to use in a given situation? It's not exactly one size fits all, is it?
Yeah, it can't be like a one size fits all kind of thing.
You're absolutely right, it's not. And that's where the profiling aspect of APPS is so powerful.
Okay.
Remember, effective persuasion always starts with understanding your audience.
For example, someone with a strong, what we call internal locus of control.
Okay.
Meaning they believe they have a high degree of control over their own lives. They might be more receptive to appeals based on logic and evidence.
Makes sense. They like to feel in control, so give them the facts and let them connect the dots themselves.
Exactly. But someone with more of an external locus of control, someone who believes outside forces have a greater influence on their lives. They might be more swayed by, say, authority figures or like the power of social proof, what everyone else is doing.
Because they're looking for those cues from their environment to kind of guide their decisions.
Precisely. APPS actually provides these fascinating matrices.
Okay.
Almost like personality maps.
Uh-huh.
That link different personality traits with the persuasion techniques most likely to resonate with them.
Oh, wow.
It even gets into a person's, get this, regulatory mode.
Regulatory mode.
Which basically means, are they more motivated by achieving gains, what APS calls a promotion focus?
Okay.
Or by preventing losses, a prevention focus.
Interesting. So, like, if I'm pitching a new idea to my boss and I know they're all about minimizing risk,
right,
I shouldn't just focus on the potential benefits. I also need to address those potential downsides head on, show how we can, like, mitigate them.
Exactly. Okay. By understanding those underlying motivations, you can tailor your message for maximum impact.
Yeah.
And again, it's not about manipulation. It's about speaking their language.
Right.
Addressing their concerns, aligning your message with their values.
This is all incredibly insightful, but it does make you wonder, like, where does free will fit into all of this?
Right.
Are we all just puppets being swayed by these techniques without even realizing it?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
And while APCS gives us a much deeper understanding of these mechanics of persuasion, it doesn't negate free will. Mm-hmm. We're not just robots responding to stimuli. We have the capacity for critical thought, for independent decision making.
Okay, that's reassuring. So how do we reconcile the existence of these persuasive techniques with the fact that people do have agency and they do make their own choices?
Think of it this way. APPS provides a detailed map of the terrain. It highlights those cognitive shortcuts, the emotional triggers that can influence our choices, but it doesn't dictate our final destination. We still have the power to navigate that terrain consciously, question our assumptions, seek out diverse perspectives.
So self-awareness is key.
Absolutely. The more we understand about how our brains work, how they're influenced, and our own personal tendencies, the more empowered we are to make those deliberate, conscious choices. And that leads us to a crucial point, I think. The ethical implications of all of this.
Right, because this knowledge is powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And like any tool, it can be used for good.
Yes.
Or for, you know, not so good.
Exactly. Just because we can influence someone doesn't mean we should.
Right.
Trust and credibility, those are built on authenticity and integrity.
That is a great point. So as we're wrapping up our deep dive into APPS and, you know, this whole idea of the adaptive unconscious, what's like one key takeaway you want our listeners to really remember?
The most powerful and ethical communication, it's not about tricks. It's not about manipulation. It's about genuine connection. It's about understanding ourselves, understanding our audience, and then crafting messages that resonate on both a cognitive and an emotional level.
Beautifully said. Sometimes we need that reminder to just like step back from the tactics and focus on that human element.
I agree. At the end of the day, authenticity and respect, those are the foundations for any meaningful engagement and any lasting impact.
Well said. That is a wrap on another deep dive. We hope you enjoyed, you know, exploring this fascinating world of APPS and persuasive communication. Until next time, keep those brains buzzing, but do it ethically.